Snyder, Jeff Howe on your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
You know how it is, how we roll, or how a lot of this state rolls. You know, when you get to Thursday in October, it is, after all, a football weekend. World Series notwithstanding. And the World Series doesn't have to stand the moment because they're off today. It's an off day. You know, we got used to calling it a travel day in the World Series. The only traveling that's being done in this World Series is by the two teams from Globe Life Field in Arlington to the Four Seasons Resort in Las Colinas. There in Irving. That's where both teams are headquartered. So that's the only traveling. It's about a 20-minute drive, just about 20 minutes, something like that, to there. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower here on The Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, and streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. My name is Craig Way. Glad to have you. Jeff Howe will be along a little later on this half hour as he finishes up some business, and then he'll be joining us. Busy program today. Coming up in a few minutes, Gene Watson, Director of Pro Scouting for the Kansas City Royals. We were going to get a World Series preview from him on Tuesday, but he had organizational meetings on both Tuesday and yesterday, so we pushed it back to today. And so we'll get his analysis of what he's seen in the first two games and what could be to come in the World Series. As we know, it will now go at least five games since Tampa Bay evened the series at a game apiece last night. So Gino will join us here in a few minutes. Then, continuing through the half hour, we'll have our Whataburger top five road trips of the weekend. We'll have those, followed by our weekly Thursday conversation with the head coach of the Vandegrift Vipers. That would be Drew Sanders. Jeff will, like I said, be here a little later on this half hour. And then Jeff will be guiding you from there forward, taking you through Inconceivable and the second hour of the program. That is due to the fact that I'll be in two places, not at the same time, but starting off first, having a conversation with Dave Aranda, the head coach of the Baylor Bears, and then I'll be off to Pluckers to record Longhorn Weekly with head coach Tom Herman. And so we'll have that. That will air tonight at 7 o'clock. Our special guest will be Mark Hagan, the Longhorns assistant head coach who handles defensive line. So we'll visit with him as well tonight. You'll hear it tonight at 7 o'clock on the program. So we'll have all of those things and other things coming your way as well. Of course, our man Snoop Daniel behind the glass. Snoop, occasionally I'll offer to stop and pick up some coffee for us on the way in. And it has been unearthed on this program, Snoop is a big Brevet fan. So you like the big old Brevet, which is like basically it's almost coffee. It's like cream with just like a little bit of coffee in the cream, something like that.
You know, I think it's best that I do get the Brevet because, you know, like I'm high strung like a Chihuahua. And I think maybe if I got like a real strong coffee, it might send me off the rail.
Yeah. So
it's just enough, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. But Snoop was up and around early morning. Were you dropping off your video cams?
Yeah.
And to your legions of your minions who do a lot of the shooting for a lot of the mixtape videos that you put on our Flex ATX website.
Yes, affectionately known as the Eye Reporters.
Reporters?
Yes.
Is that how that works?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So that's good.
I just dropped off the ones to Cedar Ridge. They're really excited about the Vista Ridge game tomorrow. And we got permission from Mr. Wyrick.
Yeah, Dwayne Wyrick, athletic director.
Uh-huh. Yes, with Round Rock ISD. Thank you for allowing us to film from a safe distance in mass.
That's very nice. So that'll be going tomorrow, shooting the video on that. But anyway, you'll see a lot of that video content, obviously, on the Flex ATX website. We have other things. What our interviews with the high school coaches go on there. We do that. We also have other things that Snoop puts up there. We'll have polls, all of that kind of stuff. That is your one-stop shopping, your clearinghouse for all things high school football in the area. Our Specs text line is open, as always, at 337-3776. one guy says the lowest rated World Series ever. MLB wanted Astros, Dodgers, and you know it, Craig. You wanted revenge. I said I would have been all for it. That would have made it better. I was all for that. I would have gone for that. But I don't think the rating thing is less. I think it's less about the matchup than it is more about what we're dealing with. We just got done with the lowest rated NBA Finals ever, and it had LeBron and the Lakers in it. Ratings are down in pro football, in the NFL, in college football, on television. Ratings are down in all of that sort of stuff because of the adjustments that folks are having to make to their lifestyles and the other things that they're doing, as well as whether it means that much to them. So, anyway, that's it's a statement on that. Hey, I would have been all for that matchup. I definitely would have been all about that. Somebody else said, can you talk about if there's any talk about coaches worried about having a forfeit in the playoffs due to COVID? The UIL said, well, basically, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. We asked Greg Tepper, managing editor of Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine, about it on Monday. We know it's out there. We know there's the increasing possibility, if not likelihood, of a forfeit. Here's what I think will happen. If two teams are scheduled to play a bi-district playoff game on a Thursday or Friday, and they have an issue, if they think the issue can be resolved by pushing it back to, like I said, maybe even as late as Monday, I could see them doing that, but not beyond that, because it would affect the next weekend's games, and you can't continue to hold up the line for everything else. So that's going to be in the back, I think, of a lot of folks' mind. That's why they're trying to, you know, see if they can be preventative about it as possible. It's difficult. It's a tough go. If this is any comfort to you, the games that have been postponed and moved back or canceled or whatever are down this week across the state of Texas. Now, there are some high profile, none any higher profile program than Westlake, not able to play its game this week against Bowie as a result of that. But overall, across the entire state of Texas, the cases are the game reschedulings are down this week. So that's good. Okay. So hope that answers that question. All right. As we talk baseball and we go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline, to have an opportunity to visit with Gene Watson, director of pro scouting for the Kansas City Royals, to get a look at the World Series. And yet, Gino, I know you are just now coming up for air. You and the Royals organization, you guys have been hard at. And this goes on all across baseball, doesn't it? Not, you know, I know the Dodgers and the Rays are really swallowed up with trying to win a World Championship, but the other 28 teams, you know, are all, you know, into it, aren't they? All dialed into trying to make their teams competitive to the point where they can be in that series next year.
Very much so, Craig, and we were pretty fortunate. I mean, it was a battle to try to get our young players back on the field. We actually have two camps going. We've got one going on in Arizona until November 20th, and this morning we're actually wrapping up a camp in Kansas City where we have essentially our top 60 prospects, and to be able to get these players back out on the field and get some semblance of a minor league season has been huge for their development and just us being able to move forward. But there was a time where we were uncertain if these kids were even going to get a chance to play. And if that were the case, you're talking about close to 18 months before a player reports to spring training. So it's been tremendous. It's been great to be able to see our young players, and I know that every other organization feels the same way right now.
Okay. Let's shift to the World Series. How about your thoughts on what you have seen from Game 1 and Game 2 in Arlington?
Well, going into it, I really felt like the Dodgers had a pretty good grasp on what would be their first World Championship since 1988. The rundown play against the Braves is just one of those pivotal moments when you look at World Championship teams. It's always one play. It's either a play's not made or a play gets made. And that was just such a huge play for them to take a deep breath and say, here's where our experience plays out. Then they start to get big hits from Bellinger. And then you move into the World Series against Tampa and you feel like, okay, they're clicking on all cylinders. And then you get a performance like Blake Snell last night. And if they get another performance like that out of Blake, and Tyler Glasnow can step up and pitch like he has historically, you're talking about a Game 7 right now. And the Dodgers really, really need Dustin May or Tony Gonsolin to step up and eat some innings and keep their – you're talking about two of their starters throughout the year that are really having a difficult time right now. And if you looked at Clayton Kershaw the other night, that 8-3 lead was pivotal because they were able to monitor his workload and get him out of the game because he'll have at least one more start, and now you're looking at a Madison Bumgarner-type situation in a Game 7. So if you put a gun to my head right now where I said it was the Dodgers in six, I believe right now we're potentially headed to a Game 7 in this series right now.
Interesting. And the other things that come to mind, and I'll look at it from both sides here, from the Rays' perspective, hey, they got even, they got their bats going, they got Brandon Lau going. All of those were important things. Like you said, Dustin May made mistakes. And you and I have talked about this before, that one of the hallmarks, and it's an unfortunate hallmark, of a young, growing, inexperienced pitcher is the inability to be able to put a hitter away with an 0-2 count. And that happened last night to May, giving up the home run afterwards, and also giving up the big hit to Wendell after he got ahead of him 0-2. It came on a 2-2 pitch, I believe, the double, but he got ahead of him. In both of those 0-2 situations, the double by Wendell and the homer by Lowther came after May had jumped ahead in the count 0-2. That still continues to be one of the ongoing challenges for pitching coaches with young pitchers, isn't it? The put-away pitch, especially after you get ahead of 0-2 in the count.
Especially, Craig, with young arms. When you look historically in the development of an arm, they're always a little bit ahead of their talent level. When you're talking about a Dustin May, guys like that, they're always a little bit ahead. So when you push them up into the major league levels at a young age, and now they're facing those experienced bats, and then you throw in the analytics where, hey, the game planning on these guys is they know they throw this pitch a percentage number of times in this count. And so it's almost an enormous learning curve for a young arm. Now you put that learning curve into the playoffs where you've got bats that are really heated up in October, it can be a very difficult task. And you've almost got to go from throw mode to pitch mode, and then you've almost got to ask them to re-game plan in the way they approach things. And I think that you're going to see a lot of that with May moving forward because it's just not working. He's a young, one of the most impressive young arms in baseball that's having a very difficult time because not only has his development been thrust to the major league level, but you're asking him to do it in October. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how they manage that moving forward in this series.
Okay. All right. So there's the Rays perspective on how they feel good about the way they attack. Let me throw this at you from the Dodger perspective. Even as we learned this morning that Dave Roberts has announced, obviously we knew Walker Buehler would start game three tomorrow night and against Charlie Morton, which would be a fantastic matchup. And then he's going to come back with Julio Urias in game four. Then you got Kershaw in game five. The Los Angeles perspective probably is that, yeah, we didn't do as well against Snell as we should have. However, we managed four runs, and we were able to get Tampa Bay to use not only the ace of their staff, but go through every arm, every key arm in their bullpen to hold on to a 6-4 victory while we went with a bullpen game. That's the Dodger perspective there. What about the reality as you look at it from that side?
Well, and that's really what it gets down to is the Dodgers, they're set up now. They ate the one game to get their pitching set up the way they want it. Now Urias becomes a very, very big start. You need these next three starts to go deep. You need innings out of your starters. So now that you take a little bit of pressure off of May and Gonsolin out of the pen, and now your depth begins to take over. And again, that swings back to Tampa and Tyler Glasnow's start. If Snell can do what he's done and Glasnow can step up and pitch big, now you're definitely talking about a Game 7 situation. And in that moment, now Kershaw's in play. Now Snell's back in play. Now Glasnow's back in play potentially for an inning. And so this series is all about the pitching. And the hitters have done a tremendous job of staying in their approaches. If you look at a lot of the hits, they're towards the center of the field. You're talking about a lot of opposite field doubles, opposite field home runs, which in that ballpark, being a new ballpark, kind of neutral, shows that the hitters have great approaches. So this is really going to come down to whose starting rotation can eat up the most innings and really be able to strategize those bullpens going into game 6 and 7.
So if we're allowing you to just slide just a little bit on your original prediction of Dodgers in 6, you're now going to update it to say Dodgers in 7?
That's what I'm saying, yes.
Okay. Okay. Hey, we can allow that. We can allow that. No problem about that. Hey, Gino, I appreciate
it. Mostly because I don't want you to be mad at me, Craig.
No, listen.
I can't watch you have a broken heart again. I can't do it.
Well, if it happens, it happens. You know, we had a great time at Game 1 Monday night. If it happens, listen, I'm a long-suffering Dodger fan. I heard somebody say it's a, you know, you get your own Dodger PTSD working. So I understand how that goes. Hey, I appreciate the time as always, Gino. We'll check in again soon.
You bet, guys. Take care.
All right. That's Gene Watson, Director of Pro Scouting of the Kansas City. Listen, I'm used to it, okay? 32 years, I know it's been heartbreaking, okay? So if they wind up not winning it, they wind up not winning it. But obviously, I'd be thrilled if they did. But I think those are the key things about it. For the Rays, they finally got the bats going. And Snell was able to pitch to a couple of things. And then, even though they had to use those key arms, they all perform pretty well. You know, Loop gave up one big hit, obviously. Fairbanks gave up the home run, obviously, to Seager, but he was able to get through a lot. And then, of course, they were able to finish it off afterwards at the end. And, you know, so using their key arms, that's going to be important for Tampa Bay, no matter about. And for the Dodgers, as Gene said, setting up the starting rotation the rest of the way now is important. And, yeah, there's going to be a lot of attention focused on that blister for Walker Buehler tomorrow night. All right, coming up next, our Whataburger Top 5, and we'll visit with Vandegrift Vipers head coach Drew Sanders. We'll do that. We've got football notes. We've got a lot still to come on the program today here on Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, and streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
This Sunday, the Dallas Cowboys travel to our nation's capital to square off with the Washington football team.
Antoine Woods at fullback, handoff to Elliott, banging to the goal line. Touchdown, Cowboys.
Pre-game at 11, kickoff at noon.
Rabbit to the wind zone, because at Specs, the fun starts here.
Now, it's time for the Whataburger Top 5.
Okay, prepare to receive.
Today's edition.
Here we go.
Top 5 road trips.
Before we get to our conversation with Drew Sanders, head coach of the Vandegrift Vipers, first of all, a man who is a master of the road trip, my co-host, now on board here. That's Jeff Howe, Horns 24/7.
It's one of those game weeks, Craig. Baylor,
it is.
I finally, on Thursday, have a Baylor depth chart in
there
my hand.
So you'll be ready for some analysis there in the 11 o'clock hour coming up. All right, so let's go to our Whataburger Top 5 road trips. Snoop, here we go. First of all, you got Round Rock at Hutto. Important matchup in 25-6A. They're Round Rock going on the road. Now, these are top 5 road trips, so this is for the road team to see what they're up against. So this is expected to be tight. Important matchup there for Round Rock on the road.
Yeah, heartbreaker losing to Cornerstone Christian. They were up 31-21 at one point and lost 35-31.
So yeah.
See if Round Rock can bounce back.
All right, here's number 4. Austin High at Lake Travis. You want to prove you're a legitimate playoff contender. Not saying they have to go in and shock the Cavaliers, but give a representative account of yourself to show you're for real playoff contender. And I do believe the Maroons are. And it's more than just Charles Wright. I do believe Austin I has a legitimate shot to be a playoff team. We find out a little more about them this week.
Zach Mercado, Andrew Mosier, they got players on the defensive side this year.
How about this one for your number 3 road trip? Lehman at Harlandale. This is the redemption tour for Lehman. They're 2-1. Do they have a legitimate shot to get to the playoffs out of District 12 5A Division 1? Maybe. If for only because the fact that Harlandale and McCollum from San Antonio have yet to play a game. Well, they're going to play Harlandale on the road. You want to show your contender? If the Lobos can get a win there, then maybe they've got a shot in that. Number 2, the old matchup. Jeff would appreciate this. How about Thrall at Thorndale?
That one's been going on for a while.
A long time in Thrall. Those Tigers going up just a few miles up
what is
Highway
that?
Highway 78. Six miles, seven miles, yeah. Something like that. Yeah, to go down there to Thorndale. So a big batch up there. And obviously the number one road trip of the week, LBJ. They got to go up 281. They got to go up to Lampasas and take on the Battling Badgers. So, again, another measuring stick there.
Lampasas is homecoming. Oh, my gosh.
Yes, it is.
They're riding on fire trucks. And
riding on fire. Okay. All right. So, there it is, your Whataburger top five road trips of the week. And then, of course, in addition to that, tomorrow we'll have our top five matchups of the week. All right, time to go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline, our weekly conversation with the head coach of the Vandegrift Vipers, Drew Sanders, who joins us, his team getting ready to host McNeil at Monroe Stadium. But first of all, Drew, a mandate performance, as some have called it, with what your team was able to accomplish at Gupton Stadium last night. And I know you had to be pleased with the totality of your team's efforts in the win over Vista Ridge.
Yeah, hey guys. Yeah, really, really pleased. I thought we came out focused and ready and was able to take all of the motivation heading into the week. I think a lot of our guys, I said in our postgame talk, I think a lot of our guys took it personal that, that they kind of felt forgotten about, that everybody was immediately picking them. We happened to lose a game to Cedar Park, and they came out and played really well. The biggest thing was they practiced so hard throughout the week that I think the results showed.
Well, two things came to mind out of that game. And one was when I saw, obviously, because we had our reporter Lauren Blackwell visited with you after the game there for Fox Sports Southwest. And then the other quote that you had there in the Austin American Statesman about, hey, we're still here. Was that the ongoing message for your guys? Because not necessarily because Vista Ridge did or didn't deserve any whatever coverage and accolades for what had gone into it. Just the mere fact that you guys still are the defending district champions and should earn your own measure of respect for that. Was that an ongoing theme as well for your guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, throughout the week, that was actually brought up by our leadership council in our weekly meetings. Is, you know, they just felt like that, we were just kind of forgotten about. And, anything that can kind of motivate young men, that I thought, that was reasonable that they kind of felt like that. And, man, they brought it to the table, and I thought they brought it on Friday night and the way they prepared and the way they played. So, yeah, I think that was a theme, and they kind of played through that.
Coach Sanders, when you talk about controlling a game, there's probably no better example of that than the fact that your ball club has 46 rushing attempts in a game. You hold Vista Ridge to 20 yards on 16 carries. Just talk about not just the effort level and the execution you saw defensively, but your offensive line and your run game to really control the game, being able to run it 46 times.
Well, you know, we went into the game, we like to run the ball, but sometimes we get a bad rep of not throwing the ball, but we're definitely going to throw the ball too.
Yeah.
But, you know, what that does is that forces them to creep up and tighten down, and we hit several big shots, almost, you know, had almost 300 yards passing, and so hit some big shots there. And so that was a big credit to their respect for our run game. And then defensively, you know, until the last drive in the fourth quarter, when we had a few subs in, they had not crossed the 50. And to me, that was probably the biggest stat of the whole night. Like that, you know, that just doesn't happen. And then especially against their high-powered offense. So, you know, I was really pleased with how we tackled. We didn't miss tackles. We fit like we talked about all week against fitting against their plays. So really pleased with our effort on both sides.
Yeah, Coach, you talk about, you know, hammering the run game, that being able to set up deep shots. You look at Ryan Back's production, Coach. I don't know that I've seen a box score. I've seen a quarterback throw for almost 300 yards, but average almost 40 yards of completion. I guess that speaks to the ability of your club to be able to hit some deep shots last week.
Yeah, Ryan is a very accurate quarterback, and we worked all week. My offensive staff felt like we were going to get those shots. Now, would we make them? You know, would we be able to throw it? Would we be able to complete it? You know, that's always that's why you go play the game. But we were able to do that. Some guys were able to get open and beat their guy in one-on-one coverage. And if you're doing that, you're going to have a successful offense. And so was pleased. And then, you know, I really – I really think our O-line protected well, too, because a lot of those shots, it takes, you know, this isn't a quick game stuff. It takes a little bit, and those guys protected, and I feel like they're getting better and better as, you know, as we go throughout the season.
Visiting with Drew Sanders, head coach of the Vandegrift Vipers here on Light the Tower on the Horn. Drew, folks might look at it from the outset and say, okay, Vandegrift's playing McNeil this week. They should be in good shape to win. For folks who don't understand the personal tug that will go on for you, and that has been going on this week for you as you prepare your team, but your own personal tug there to have someone as close to you now on the opposite sideline as the head coach at McNeil. Can you discuss that a little bit about what it's like to go through a game week like that with one of your own assistants who you're very close to still, now on the opposite side as a head coach? I hear coaches talk about it sometimes, but don't get into a lot of detail on that. What has this week been like for you in that respect?
Yeah, it's really cool. You know, I'm really happy for him that it's very hard to get a head coaching job, and especially a 6A head coaching job in the state of Texas, and he deserves it and is doing a great job. And you can see the improvement, you know, with their quarterback injury. You know, it's just, and who knows when he'll be back. I don't know. He could be back this week. I don't know about that. But if he does, that definitely changes things for them. But they're finding a way to compete just like I knew they would. They've improved defensively as you watch them on tape. But yeah, the personal relationships, I think it's cool. It's going to be probably a little bit unusual with him standing on the other sideline, you know, at Monroe, because he's been part of so many big victories at Vandegrift and critical component of a lot of our wins the last few years. But I think once the game starts, it'll be just like any other game. He might yell something across, who knows, during the game. I might yell back. But, you know, it's leading up to it. I think we've talked almost every day this week. So it's been pretty normal. We just talk football like we always do. So, but I'm really proud of him and know he's going to do a great job in building that program.
Of course, we're talking about Scott Hermes, the head coach at McNeil, who was on Drew's staff there at Vandegrift. You said you've talked every. How do you have a conversation with him during a game week, knowing that your two teams are going up against? What kinds of things are you able to discuss without either side divulging state secrets, so to speak?
Yeah, you know, it's not that hard. You know, we don't always talk about football, but we'll talk about whatever. We'll talk about players, or, you know, he knows all of our players, so he'll ask about certain players or how they're doing, or, you know, you can talk overall stuff without saying, you know, the exact game plan, what they thought about this or what they thought about that. So yeah, it's actually fairly easy to do that. And then we talk about other teams too. You know, what do you think about this? We have, you know, conversations about other teams in the district and things like that. So yeah, and then we we'll share, like, as this year goes on, we'll share. You know, like, what were you trying to do? You know, well, I was trying to do this. You know, we'll try to explain and learn from each other. And so it's, you know, that's what all of us coaches do. There's several coaches that I talk to throughout the week and in the district and out.
Wow. Okay. It is tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. You'll hear it on 101.9 and AM 1260, obviously, with Merle and Hank and Scott on the call, along with Zach as well, and Snoop here in the studio. It is always a pleasure, Drew. I appreciate you taking the time. I know you're happy with how things are rolling, but the work's still ahead of you, so best of luck tomorrow night. And good to be back at Monroe, right?
Oh, my goodness, yeah, almost Halloween, and we're playing our first home game. We're excited.
Yeah, absolutely. That's tomorrow night. Thanks so much, Drew. Appreciate you taking the time. All right.
Talk to you soon.
Yeah, all right, that's Drew Sanders. And, yeah, think about that. How about them finally getting a home game in there as a result of that? And playing as well as they have been.
Yeah, because they had a neutral site game against Ellison, and just the way we're at Gupton last week. So
yeah, and having to push a game back as a result of that. So so it's good that they're able to play a home game, and they played very, very well as a result of that. All right, our visits with Coach Sanders are always brought to you by our friends at Cedar Park Overhead Door. Check them out online at cedarparkgaragedoors.com. They are also the people who love to bring you Jeff's football notes.
Yeah, Craig, we'll make this quick. We'll get more into Baylor next hour, but just kind of looking at some of Baylor's numbers, one thing we talked about yesterday was the need to create more havoc plays. And we've also talked about defensively for Chris Ash, the focus on being limiting your missed tackles, which are going to limit explosive plays. And we're just talking about how explosive plays have really been what's killed this Texas defense, especially in the run game, Craig. But you're, and this is just how much we don't know about Baylor right now. Craig, do you want to guess how many 25-plus yard plays Baylor has from scrimmage this year?
Four, maybe?
Four.
Wow.
It's exactly four.
I'm going to guess, did they have any against West Virginia?
They had two against West Virginia. Had a 34-yard touchdown pass from Charlie Brewer to Josh Fleeks. You also had a 25-yard touchdown pass from Charlie Brewer to Ben Sims. That was in overtime. And then you have a Craig Williams touchdown run against Kansas, and then a Treston Ebner touchdown pass from Charlie Brewer against
Kansas. Plus, the kickoff return against
Kansas. And Treston
Kansas.
Ebner has two kickoff returns. That's a prospect I really, really like, Craig. I really like Treston Ebner when he was coming out of Henderson. I know Texas recruited him. It was one of those weird deals. When you've got an athlete like that, okay, is he a running back? Is he a receiver? Could we play him at corner, safety? Baylor just took him and figured out the rest later, and now he's one of the more explosive running backs in the Big 12. But this is a Baylor offense, Craig, and I know Charlie Brewer's got the health issues, and Dave Aranda did say this week, Charlie's healthy, he's ready to go. But you look at this Baylor offense, if this Texas defense can't get right against this Baylor offense in terms of limiting explosive plays and trying to make some big plays of your own, then you have to wonder if it's going to get there at some point this season, maybe against Kansas, because of Kansas offense minus Puka Williams. You can do that, Craig. But that, again, explosive play margin in this game is something I'm really, really interested to see, especially given how much Baylor's offense has struggled. Defensively, Craig, when you look at the Texas offense against the Baylor defense, one of the matchups I really like, and this is going to be one of those ones that until further notice, like I just talked about with explosive plays, until further notice, you have to talk about it. And I asked Mike Yurcich about this yesterday. Tom Herman's talked about they need their wide receivers to be able to get off press coverage. And when you look at these Baylor corners, Craig, Raleigh Tejada's a guy that's played a lot of football. Find me a faster corner in the Big 12 than Kalen Barnes. And we know Dave Aranda's defensive style coming from LSU. They're going to play a lot of man. They're going to get up in your face. And until those outside receivers for the Longhorns can prove that they can consistently get off press coverage. Now, Mike Yurcich did say, look, there's got to be stuff on the call sheet where you scheme those guys open. So he did say some of it's on him. But at the end of the day, it's got to be guys working on technique. A lot of that stuff's done Tuesday and Wednesday in the one-on-ones in practice. So can that outside receiver group of Texas get better at getting off of press coverage against two, I think, two really good corners at Baylor?
All right, that's our football notes this hour, and we'll have more from Jeff coming up next hour as well. Question on the Specs text line. Somebody said, random question. When you are with Tom at Pluckers, do you eat at Pluckers? If so, what's your order? Just curious. I usually get an order to go because I'm too busy during the course of the thing and just get it to go. It ranges. I like lots of their different wing varieties. I've done that. Their sandwiches.
You can never go wrong with a lemon pepper.
It's very good.
And as Rod Babers has pointed out, apparently you can get spicy.
The spicy lemon pepper. My son Andy introduced me. That's a lemon pepper with a medium sauce. It's got a little heat on it, but it's good. It's good.
I'm a lemon pepper guy.
Yeah, I think you might like those because you like a little spice. You're not bad with the heat.
Today specifically, Craig, probably not, but on any other day, yes.
Okay. All right, coming up, Jeff will have Jeff's going to have Inconceivable. Got two words for you. Florida Man, that'll be next when we continue with Light the Tower here on the Horn.
Horns look to snap a two-game losing streak this Saturday afternoon when the Baylor Bears come to Austin. Pre-game with Bucky Godbolt and Chad Hastings at 10:30 a.m. Kickoff at 2:30 with Craig Way and Roger Wallace on the call. And
you keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
We'll get back to Texas and Baylor here coming up in the second hour of the show. We've also got the Lunch Rush edition of the Friday Night Flex with Snoop. But Snoop, before we get to Inconceivable, I need a breaking news sounder. Thank you, sir. If you're a fan of the Dallas Football Cowboys like myself, this is definitely a note of interest. According to Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network, the Baltimore Ravens plan to sign veteran wide receiver Dez Bryant to the practice squad if his workout goes well and he passes a physical, a source said. Baltimore previously worked out Bryant in August, so this is more of a check-in. Should land in Baltimore finally. So Dez Bryant could be throwing up the X once again, Snoop. We'll see what happens.
He still caught it.
Yeah, he did. So we'll why you got to go there? I just wanted to leave that hanging in case the audience wanted to debate it themselves, but you had to go there. So anyway, let's get to Inconceivable Snoop. Let's start on a light note, and then we'll go a little bit off the rails. A couple in Louisiana are seeing double again after welcoming their second set of identical twins. Aaron Credo gave birth to twin girls Lola and Allie on September 22nd, 6 years after welcoming sons Cooper and Grant with husband Jake Credo. Recalling her journey to become a mother of four, Aaron said she was shocked and speechless when she learned that she was pregnant with twins again. Dr. Cliff Moore, the physician who oversaw Aaron's pregnancy, said that about 1 in 111,111 pregnancies result in a second set of identical twins. To put that in perspective, he said, we deliver approximately 8,000 babies at a women's hospital each year. So we only see that about once every 15 years.
Aww.
It's one of those deals, Snoop. Like my wife and I, we had, and I've talked about this on air. I'm not sharing any secrets. Like we had our fertility issues, so you know, we had to go to the fertility clinic. And they tell you, like, when you do go through that process, like, look, your chances of having multiples increases in some cases greatly, depending on the kind of treatment you're getting. So we're like, oh man, what? We just really want a kid. Like, what happens if we get like two or three or four or whatever? But
oh,
man,
my God, three, four,
identical twins twice. That is the very definition.
It's like having Derek and Alec Cohen. That's an ARN inside thing.
it's the very definition of inconceivable.
My homegirl, God, I wonder if she's listening. Anyway, Wheeler, she said that she had an identical twin and they used it for evil. Like playing tricks on people and like messing with boys, like in dating.
Yeah, I can see that. I can definitely see that.
Very
happen.
Evil.
Snoop, speaking of evil.
Oh, one more.
Go ahead.
Because we'll never talk about twins. I mean, my favorite all-time twins are the ones from G.I. Joe. The ones, oh, God, I don't even remember their names, but if you punched one, the other would feel it.
So your favorite twins are twins that you can't remember their names.
G.I. Joe. Oh, my God, the twins. I got to know. Twin brothers. Hold on. Please.
I thought you were going to go.
Tomax and, oh, yeah, it was the Crimson Twins.
Okay.
Anyway, sorry.
I thought you were going to go like Deontay and Armani Foreman. Those are two twins.
Okay.
I think Longhorn fans like Deontay won a Doak Walker Award while he was here.
So. The Griffin. Are they twins or brothers? The Griffin brothers that went to Bowie.
Yeah.
Okay. Just checking. There's a lot of great twins. That's a great conversation we could go down.
Twins.
Twin talk.
Great twin combinations in the sports world. Right. That is. All right, Snoop. You know, you mentioned evil a minute ago. You know what else is evil in a lot of cases? Florida man. And similar to being enrolled in a jelly club, it is the gift that keeps on giving the whole year when you have a segment like we have with Inconceivable. This, Snoop, according to the Orlando Sentinel, authorities arrested a Florida man early Monday after he reportedly attacked his girlfriend with a pumpkin. At their Largo home, Nathan Garisto, 26, was arrested and faces charges of domestic battery after reportedly throwing a winter squash and its innards at his girlfriend, according to a report by Newsweek. Garisto has been living with his girlfriend for a year and a half. The 29-year-old woman was arguing with her boyfriend and asked him to leave the residence several times. Garisto was reportedly, tell me if this surprises you, Snoop, in this situation, intoxicated and refused to leave. He then responded by striking his girlfriend with a pumpkin and throwing a tarp with pulp and seeds onto her. When police arrived, they saw the woman covered in pumpkin innards. That's a report from the Orlando Sentinel. They just wanted to see how many times they could get the word innards into this story. So
Those seeds are big and heavy, so I'm sure they hurt.
Domestic battery is not something to ever joke about.
Oh, hell no.
But, I mean, the fact that I can imagine being a police officer rolling up on the scene and you just see a woman with like pumpkin innards are just disgusting. Snoop, you've carved a pumpkin, right?
Yeah, it's like
it's gross.
It's like coleslaw, but even stringier.
Yeah, it's the inside of a pumpkin is nasty, man. It's gross. Like, you don't want to be. You definitely don't want to be wearing pumpkin innards. Snoop, when you were, I think we've had this conversation before. When you were growing up, did you or did you not have Kool-Aid in the house?
Yeah, we had the Kool-Aid.
Okay, I've had a conversation with somebody on this station.
We use real sugar too, which means we have to use like half a pound to make it sweet.
Right. So, Craig I was talking with. There's somebody in the Horn family in terms of our on-air talent producers that didn't deal with Kool-Aid growing up. I did. But Snoop, I don't know if we ever or our parents ever thought about doing this, let alone actually doing it. What a Florida man did, he's accused of using a 24-cent pack of Kool-Aid to rack up nearly $1,000 in fraudulent charges at a Walmart in North Naples, Florida. Bradley D. Young, 37, who's also a felon out of the state of Ohio, faces grand theft and shoplifting charges, according to the Collier County Sheriff's Office. Collier County, isn't that where Ray Finkel was from? An Ace Ventura Pet Detective?
Oh, my God.
I think it was. If not, I'm just going to roll with it because that's still a really good movie. It holds up. Police were called to the store. You know that scene like where Jim Carrey's like in the dock and he's got to go like 5 feet and he takes the little like personal fan, like the little hand fan with a button, and he sticks it in the water just to go like 5 feet to grab the ladder? That still cracks me up to this day. Police were called to the store around 5:45 p.m. Sunday on reports of a theft in progress. Now, Snoop, check this out. A store loss prevention officer watched him scan merchandise with a Kool-Aid packet concealed in his hand, so the items rang up as 24 cents each. So basically, he's got the merchandise, he's got the Kool-Aid packet in his hand, and just kind of swiping it like that. Young is accused of ringing up 3 packets and some other small items totaling $24.44 for $994.13 worth of merchandise. The worker told police she recognized Young. This is the inconceivable part, Snoop. If you're going to commit a crime, which I don't condone, don't do it at the same store, because the worker told police she recognized Young from a prior incident at the store.
Yeah, you can't hit the same store, fam.
She told police Young also took a soda and a fan from a shelf and then returned the items to customer service for a refund of $9.48. He's accused of walking out of the store with a shopping cart of unpaid items, including a scooter valued at $248, a dual navigation system valued at $119.87, and $160 worth of batteries. What do you need $160 worth of batteries for?
Sell them. eBay.
Who's selling, like, black market batteries, aftermarket batteries? Are batteries that... Did I miss the story on batteries being a hot commodity?
People buy anything online.
Well, yeah,
and nobody's going to check you at Walmart or Target, unfortunately. They really won't.
Yeah, that's...
Rarely. I'm not saying to go ham. I'm just saying they have cameras, and they'll bust you without somebody at the door.
But, I mean, you're not the brightest crayon in the box if you're going to commit a crime, number one. But, number two, go back to the same store and try to get away with something again. I don't know. Like I said, Florida man, it definitely is the gift that keeps on giving. For Inconceivable. When we come back, we've got the Lunch Rush edition on a Thursday of the Friday Night Flex, plus more Texas Baylor talk as we get you ready for a football weekend. We'll do it in hour number two here on Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM, 1260, streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. The Horn is